that for me, the idea of finishing my teaching responsibilities this term in this way is very refreshing, and I feel uplifted by having this opportunity. And I hope that those of you who are probably busier, at least until the exams are over, than I am, will equally get some benefit from it. The topic you began discussing was, you quote theology of history, I'm not exactly sure what that is, we'll spend an hour discussing what it might mean. And then, probably about 2 hours too late, I gave you the title Yodeyadaat Elyon, which is more eloquent than your title, but also may not be exactly what we want to talk about tonight. I don't want to present things that are too complicated. People's energies and memorization skills are elsewhere occupied for the moment. Almost everything that I say will be fairly well known, except that cumulatively, it may actually sound new. Now, one of the points of departure for such discussions is, why is it that so many Rabbanim today know exactly what's going to happen in the future? How do they know this? And did we know these things in the past? I mean, such a higher level than everybody else, the previous generations, we know all these things. Or maybe it's the other way around. I want to look at a few aspects of this phenomenon. How much do we, the highest levels within Klal Yisrael, how well do they know the future? How accurately can they speak about the future? Evidence number one. There are many places in Tanakh where Nevi'im speak about the future. And there are many fewer places where people seem to have heard about the future. Examples, there's lying around the house. And I'm sorry if those people are going to take Shulton with me next term. We'll hear about this again, maybe in greater detail. Yaakov Avinu says things about Shevet Yehuda. Where is Shevet Yehuda? Lav ad ki yavo shiloh u'ikat amir. Clearly, it is something to the future of Shevet Yehuda. According to many Rishonim, it has to do with the future of Shevet Yehuda during the period of Shoftim. If not during the period of Shoftim, during the period of Malachim, meaning within biblical history. I don't see anybody in Sefer Shoftim saying, well, we knew all about this because we read Birkat Yaakov. It could very well be that if they did discuss what Yaakov said, that some of the people in the period of Shoftim would have held like Rashi, and some would have held like Ibn Ezra or Rashbam, and the result would be that you could not use Birkat Yaakov as a proof of what definitely is going to happen. Could be during the period of Shoftim that the people who studied didn't get any of these Rishonim, and off there without a rudder. point is that if we think of Yaakov giving foolproof information about the future, which people can bank on, they don't seem to be going to the bank with it. I'm not even sure if they're putting it under the mattress. Ella, it means the nevuah is a nevuah. And apparently, people can live without the absolute certainty that they know exactly what the nevuah means. I gave the Yaakov, it's fresh in all of our minds, it's fresh in my mind because I look at these passages in Chumash whenever I teach Nevi Mishonim. I think it's important to go back and see where this is coming from. It's a fact. I go to Nevi'im. And I find that Nevi'im don't seem to know exactly what their nevuot are supposed to signify. A couple of examples. Example that has been noticed by scholars. Yirmiyahu speaks about an enemy from the north. You would ask most people in the street, they would tell you, the enemy from the north is Babylonia. Makes a lot of sense. You go through Yirmiyahu from Perek Aleph to Perek Yutet, the name Babel is not mentioned. You say, maybe Yirmiyahu was thinking about some other northern kingdom. Maybe. Maybe the Nevuah meant some other northern kingdom. B'diavad, now that we're in retrospect reading this later, it seems that we know something that you may or may not have known. We know it is Bava. But for 19-year-old Prakim, the Navi does not show off his specific, particular knowledge of what's going to happen. Now, these passages are particularly interesting because Bible critics very often speak about how Nevuot were later edited and the Nevuot fits the way history turned out. I mean, somebody later fixed it. But clearly, these 19 Prakim, they have scribes copying over and over. You would think just once or twice they would slip in the name Babel. But perhaps if these Prakim now are in more or less chronological order, then up to the fourth year of the reign of Yehoiakim, Yirmiyahu didn't know this. Later on, Yirmiyahu delivers a very serious nevuah about how Babel will dominate for 70 years. There's a Navi named Hananiah ben Azur who walks up to Yirmiyahu, is wearing a yoke around his neck to symbolize the domination by Babel. Hananiah ben Azur breaks the yoke and he speaks in God's name. He says, oh no, there's no such yoke. And Yirmiyahu's reaction is, I don't know, maybe God spoke to you after he spoke to me. Yirmiyahu is quiet. That night, the Rabban Shem tells Yirmiyahu, Hanan ben Azur is a false prophet, he's a misleading prophet. But until he has Nevuah, he says, maybe. And if you're right, Yeshakokim, I'm glad to hear it. So we go through Nevi'im, and again, the existence of Nevuah does not guarantee that the Navi and certainly not the community knows exactly what that is supposed to mean. Their nevuot that, of course, are fulfilled in a different way than people would anticipate. You stick to your meal, your meal campaigns. The nevuot that about the destruction of Yehoyachin, and you look at the history, it didn't seem to work out that way, and Mefarshim say Yehoyachin did tshuva. Repentance, it didn't happen. And again, there's no sense that predicting the future accurately is so inherent to the notion of nevuah that without that accuracy, the nevuah just doesn't mean anything. It means something. It's a warning. Yehoyachin acted on that warning, and the path of history was deflected. My conclusion from these last few minutes, again, nevuah is not primarily about writing tomorrow's New York Times yesterday. It seems more about, mostly more about mapping out certain directions, telling people what to do, and not necessarily helping people to handicap political futures. A Navi could fully agree with one of the great American philosophers who said, making predictions is a very risky business, especially about the future. Quoting Lawrence Berra, otherwise known as Yogi Berra. Now, within Tznach, there seem to be some nevuot that are much more specific about details, and some that seem to be less, that are more about giving musar. I'll give you the example on the other side. Sefer Daniel, scholars will use the term apocalyptic, the revelation of the end, as opposed to what they call classical prophecy. In Daniel, it does seem that the Navi is not about giving Musar, it's more about saying this is the path that history is going to traverse. Plans of history are up there in heaven, and we're down here on earth watching the movie. Or Daniel is down here on earth watching the movie, as it were. You say, well, in classical nevuah, the Kiryahu, the Iker is to get people to tshuva, and in Daniel, it's different. Again, scholars will make the distinction, classical prophecy versus apocalyptic. Funny thing is, that we don't know pshat in Daniel either. As a matter of fact, the apocalyptic sections of Daniel begin with Daniel not knowing Pshat in Yirmiyahu. Great section of Daniel, beginning with Perek Tet, Yirmiyahu says, I was reading the books, meaning I was reading Yirmiyahu, and I know this business about 70 years, and I wasn't, it didn't seem to be working out, and I fasted, I wanted to know what's pshat in Yirmiyahu. Now, the thing is, we don't know what pshat is in Daniel. You could say, well, you know, we just need to get the right pshat, and just work hard enough, somebody will eventually come up with the correct pshat. We'll know exactly what the roadmap to be at the Mashiach is supposed to be. But for 2,000 years, nobody has done that. And you begin to wonder at a certain point, whether it is really the divine plan to provide Daniel for those remarkable eschatological mathematicians who figured it all out, or whether there's something else going on, Sefer Daniel, which is more important for us, and that we will have to study Sefer Daniel without getting that assurance. Go to the next step. I know this Yeshiva, which has had serious Bala Machshava on its faculty. And which has integrated Halacha and Machshava in a way that may really be innovative compared to much of the history of Jewish philosophy. So if I look at these issues using the kind of perspective that I got, and many others got from some Leitschik itself, which means we're looking at these issues, let's ask, what's about the halacha? Where's the halacha fit into all this? Regarding the vua, and I'm not going to spend time deriving this from Pesukim. Major Pesukim to think about the Pesukim in Dvarim, about the Navi, and the Pesukim Yirmiyahu in Yud-Chet, where Yirmiyahu, God tells Yirmiyahu, you know, I do whatever I please, whatever I want, and I can be ready to destroy a nation. Rega adaber al goy, the tosh from the totes, and then they do tshuva, and they change, and vice versa, which implies that the whole idea of God revealing the future, certainly in detail, somehow goes against divine sovereignty. But those are major psukim to look at. If I take the Rambam, the book of the study of Torah, beginning by Zion, going through the Tet with various breaks. The Rambam says, and of Zion, there are some Nevi'im where their Nevuah is basically for themselves alone, expand their minds, make them spiritually deeper. And the Navi may also be sent to a nation or a group of people to tell them what to do. When a Navi is sent to others, he is given a sign that the people can know that he was truly sent by God. And the Rambam ends Perek Zayin by saying, it is possible that a man will perform these otot moftim who is not a Navi, for whatever reason, despite the fact that you can have a false prophet who passes the test, mitzvah l'shmolo. It's a halachic psak. If the man passes the test for being a Navi, there's an obligation to obey him when he tells you to do certain things. A lav tishmolo. Adam gadol chacham lulim vahu. There's a condition for someone to be a Navi is he has to be well-educated philosophically and morally and worthy of nevuah. But even such a person could end up being mistaken, but you're obligated to obey him. Just as, if you're learning Sanhedrin, we are commanded to determine a trial based on two witnesses. We have no absolute guarantee that these witnesses are telling the truth, but that's a procedure that the halacha determined. And in such matters, we say, "Hanistarot Hashem Elokeinu, Haniglot Lanu Vaneinu, Ki Adam Yireh La'Einayim, Hashem Yireh Lelevav." In a legal system, there are things we're supposed to do. Which means now, that according to the Rambam, the idea of the Navi guaranteeing himself through the ultimate faith, through showing some ability to tell the future, that is mainly a halachic principle. It is done in order that the Navi should get his authority. Now the Rambam says, and this is something we generally read, that in this respect, there's a difference between Nevuah L'tova and Nevuah L'ra. Nevuah L'ra, God may predict doom, and it doesn't take place because people repented. If God promises promises good things, then it's going to happen. Question you ask yourself, why is that so? So I thought, the simple thing, when I was a child, I would say, well, a child doesn't mean it's wrong. But Rabbanu Shlom is merciful. So in terms of bad nevuot, you always have another chance. In terms of good nevuot, once he promises, he will do it. May not be exactly the way you want him to do it. Maybe that he will grudgingly fulfill that promise. But once promised, you know, God isn't a bad guy, so to speak. It's one way of reading it. But you understand very well that even the Gula Tova, how exactly it is fulfilled, or maybe a variety of ways that can happen. If the purpose is to verify the Navi, then accuracy is important. Because otherwise, you don't know, is this a Navi, or is it somebody who just guessed right? But in terms of giving you that kind of detailed information you can bank on, is that all clear? I'll take this one step further in a direction that is different from what I said about before. In the Drasha Taran, second Drasha, the Ran explains in the Nevuah L'tova and the Nevuah L'ra differently than I did. I don't know if it contradicts what I said, but it's a different approach. It's a much more halacha-centric approach. The Ran says, basically, divine sovereignty means God does what he chooses to do. The only thing is, there's a halachic problem. There's a halacha of nevuah. And in the halacha of nevuah, there has to be some way of distinguishing a true prophet from a false prophet. So there has to be some test of truth, some verification. In principle, God could revoke nevuah L'tova, nevuah L'ra, and the Ram says, in Achinami, regarding the Vim who are not messengers to other people, that may really be the case. When you look, for example, I'm not entering into the example in detail, it's an example that most of you have thought about at some time. The Avot have promises, beginning with Pashva Yishlach, Yaakov is worried what's going to happen to him, but didn't Yaakov believe in the promises were given to him? So Rashi says, well, he was worried that perhaps He didn't merit those promises anymore. But you say, I didn't didn't Yaakov know the Rambam? Didn't he know that the Nevuah L'tova is irrevocable? The Ran's answer is, even if he knew the Rambam, it's not relevant because the only point of that principle is if Yaakov is giving the Nevuah to others. If Yaakov is going to Klal Yisrael and he's saying, I am a Navi, God sent me, and you should do X or Y, and you have to fulfill the mitzvah Elav Tishmon of acting on the basis of his instructions, then you get the principle of Nevuah L'tova remains and Nevuah L'ra does not remain. Because if the Nevuah L'tova were to be reversed, the people would not know if that Navi is a true Navi or a false Navi. So in order to guarantee that verification, to enable people to follow the principles of Elav Tishmon, the Rabban Shlom has to, so to speak, limit his sovereignty to a certain degree. But again, with the Avot, this was not relevant. The Avot were not sent to anybody other than to themselves. And what was, again, principle? Even Yirmiyahu was speaking about the Navi to others. In principle, there's no reason that people should have this accurate picture of the future, either for good or for bad. The elements of prediction are relatively secondary, or very secondary, in terms of where this goes. If you look at it from a halachic point of view, you again don't get the sense that the Nevuah is about is knowing what will happen tomorrow, knowing what will happen next year, and having that kind of information. What will happen? You get people to Teshuva. Or the way you learn Pshat in the Nevuah L'tova, it may end up that's fulfilled in a somewhat different way than you anticipated. One more point in this vein, following somebody who qualifies in Shalacha, although the context is not purely halachic. In Gemara, Nevi'im are sometimes called Divrei Kabbalah. Most often, what we say Divrei Torah, Divrei Kabbalah Le'alfina. We cannot use a pasuk in Nach as a basis for halach. Reb Chaim read the word Kabbalah, or Kuf Beit Lamed Hei, differently than the usual reading. There was a time to bother, what's the big Kabbalah? Tradition, what does tradition have to do with Nevuah? You should have said Nevuah if you meant Nevuah. So Chaim said that Kuf Beit Lamed Hei is a synonym for Nevuah, and you should read it not Kabbalah, but Kibbalah, complaint, Musar. Because the essence of Nevuah is giving Musar and not predicting the future. Along those lines, Reb Chaim answered another question. Why is Sefer Daniel Uktuvim and Ad Nevi'im? Rishonim were concerned with the question. Also, many modern scholars would say that the canon, Shnei Weinman, which is the rebel who suggested it, the canon of Nevi'im was closed at a certain point. Same way the Torah was closed in Moshe Rabbeinu, of course. So likewise, Nevuah, there was a point where this is the end of the Nevuah, and that some of the books of Ketuvim were still coming in at a later point. So just means that Daniel is later than the other Levites. You ask the Rambam, the Rambam would say that the Nevi'im are a higher level of Nevuah than Ketuvah. So Daniel is a lower level of Nevuah than Yahu. And Chol Chazal, that Shmuel wrote Megillat Rut, it means that when Shmuel wrote Shoftim, and part of Shmuel, he was operating at a higher level of Nevuah than when he was writing Megillat Rut. You ask the Rambam the answer. Reb Chaim gives another answer. Reb Chaim says, Nevuah is about giving Musar. You read Sefer Daniel. Daniel doesn't give Musar. Daniel sees visions. According to Chazal, Daniel was accompanying some of these visions. He was with Chag Yisachar Malach, he was with regular Nevi'im. They didn't see what he saw. The point of Chaim is that they were Nevi'im, so their job, so to speak, was to tell the people what to do based on what was revealed to them. Daniel is involved in a different task, seeing something about the future, looking up at the heavens and seeing history unfold. You know, it's interesting enough that the Chaim is Mechavim here. It's the kind of distinction made by all these modern scholars between classical and one apocalyptic. Ask people in the street, they've never thought the Chaim would be so up on contemporary Bible scholarship. What's really happening here, if I want to give it a more systematic outlook, so Chaim is thinking of Nevuah very much in terms of the halachic aspects of Nevuah, and apocalyptic doesn't really fit that framework. It's a different kind of story. It's a different social function. Where does it take us? Close to 20th century. The Rambam itself. And here I'm saying this very quickly because some of the Rambam wrote about, and something that one way or another, many of the Rambam's Talmidim, including Lichtenstein, one end, myself, meaning the idea that the future is not really our business, particularly the future is not our business. So our job is to live in the present. Excuse my quoting him. Remember the poem by Cardinal Newman, which I understand has been set to music as well, and sung very often. Lead kindly light. When Newman says, I don't have to see where the road is going, I need to have a light for the next step. I need to know what am I supposed to do next. And isn't the Rav emphasized a great deal of this? Halacha means knowing what to do, means considering what to do. Does that mean having a key to the universe? That I'd like to quote the Pasuk in Kitisa, and it's not that far from Pshat. Lirita tachurai v'panai lo yirau. You want to understand history, you can understand history in retrospect. But don't try to understand history and future. The German form of this is Hegel's statement, preface to the philosophy of right. The owl of Minerva spreads her wings at dusk. The Greek goddess Athena is the goddess of wisdom. And those of you who know owls, you know when the owls get going is at nightfall. Meaning that philosophy understands things retrospectively and prospectively. The difference between Hegel's formulation and Dutch formulation. I wrote a page on this in Oracle Tradition about 10 years ago, and we don't have time to quote it, and look it up in the rock. But that attitude really is, it's our business is what to do now, what to do next. It's foolish to try to calculate, to try to get to make claims to what's going to happen, why it's going to happen. Now for a corrective to the book that I read about 40 years ago. I'm sorry to say, when I first read it, I don't think I understood the profundity of the book. It was after the Yom Kippur War. Many people were desperate. They saw the whole religious Zionist roadmap had been reversed. After 67, they thought it's one victory after the other, and now suddenly you weren't around then. But suddenly, you know, the Arabs had the element of surprise. And Syrians had driven through and were invading. The Egyptians had a lot farther to get before they could invade, so they didn't quite invade. It was a very close call. Then it ended up differently. The military situation was worse. But for a lot of people, this is not the way they had been taught it's supposed to happen. Gaon Tauzal wrote a book called Hama'alot Mima'amakim. And the immediate historical argument was that what happened in Kippur does not undermine our understanding of the future. It's the contrary. Because here you see that even though the surprise was on the other side, everything was set up for the worst possible situation, Israel still won a victory. So that proves the messianic hopes rather than undermining them. That's the part that I noticed then. There's another point that people, I don't know if people here actually knew what I'm going to tell. It's a few years already. So the other people never met him. But he had a certain common sense about him. A famous story that people in Bush asked him and asked Lichtenstein about that people should have a sense of humor. And Lichtenstein gave a very good case that people should have a sense of humor. And Mattel just said, first of all, a sense of humor goes crazy. It's the end of the whole thing. So here, Mattel writes, and that, I didn't know, I didn't appreciate those lines. But Mattel says, it's the nature of a human being to think about the future, to project into the future. At a trivial level, it should be obvious to anybody. There's nobody here who is not thinking at some level where they'll be in 15 minutes from now. Because it's simply part of what goes on in a human being's mind. You know, Samuel Johnson, also a guttural in common sense, and you find what people are actually thinking about. At any moment, you're either thinking about the past or about the future. You're very rarely thinking about the exact present. That's simply part of the metaphysics, epistemology of the human being, and if you want more technical philosophical or texts, they can give it. But it's more, it's not just that we are projected towards the future. But they're also part of the human being when they look for meaning in life in the deeper sense of the word. You always are thinking about the future in some way. It doesn't mean that you're only right about the future, but it does mean that it's something that is built into our way of thinking. And from that point of view, leaving aside how much Nebuah can do to guarantee that we have exact knowledge, the fact that we think of the future doesn't mean we have certainty of the future. But it does mean that when people think what is going to be, what's going to happen, there's a certain balance between what I might call the halachic imperative, that our life is in the present tense, and the question that hammers away at us is, Ma Hashem Elokecha Doresh Mimach? What does God want you to do? And from that point of view, thinking about the future is only secondary. If I have some idea of the future, if I have reason to believe it'll be alive in 10 years, then it's a good reason for me not to throw away all my money. Look around. Students in close will have no assurance that they will have enough money to support me before. So I expect to live. I have to take that into consideration. I have to think of the future, but it's part of the human being, not all, except from a halachic point of view, so to speak. Knowledge of the future simply means to an end. From a human point of view, don't tell us right, though. There's more to it, part of being a human being. If you have a certain sense, where are people going to be? You think, as you get older, you start thinking, where will my students be? And at some point, I may not be here anymore. It's part of my being human is to think about that. Not only because I have some practical task that I can do in that part. So to sum up what we've discussed, one of the things I emphasize a great deal is that if you just go back to traditional sources, they are not that much about the notion that you only are holy enough and you only are aligned enough with God, you're going to have this kind of detailed knowledge of the future, even when God reveals himself to you. Even if you're a Navi, you don't necessarily have that kind of ability to sit back and let the movie unfold. It doesn't seem to be the nature of Nebuah. It doesn't seem to be the nature of the way people in Tanakh function when they do have a real relationship to Nebuah or to the Brachot, to Chumash, and so forth. Secondly, if we saw that the way Halacha works out the Halacha of the Nebuah, again, the emphasis is very much upon the immediate ethical and practical implications, rather than the notion of God giving you late-breaking bulletins of what's going to happen tomorrow. And then thirdly, from my purely human anthropological point of view, where I believe that we need a complementary relationship between the kind of halachic philosophy that the Rebbe emphasized, which emphasizes responsibility in the present, and which implicitly or explicitly warns people away from being beguiled by all kinds of visions of what might be in the future, and as a kind of common sense corrective, if you will, of what we tell. This is still part of, we're still human beings. And halacha reminds you that it's very important to be a human being, and that to be a malach predicting the future. And there's also an element in Yahadut, remember, if you're a human being, you're not a malach, who can be indifferent to the future. We look at the present without any relationship to what happens after. I hope I didn't go over my time. I hope I didn't go under my time, so patience. And I hope I gave you something to think about without distracting you too much from the practical considerations of your, might be relevant to your professional future, and either on pragmatic grounds or on psychological grounds, apocalyptic grounds. Okay, I'm finished.